I'm really happy to be with you here today. I'm Colleen Terry, and unlike most people here, I am not widowed. In fact, someone asked me in the bathroom, she says, "So how long have you been widowed?" And I said, "My whole life." I said, "I've been widowed my whole life. I've never married." And so I have a different set of challenges in some ways, but very similar in others. And so I guess that's why they asked me to speak. But I am grateful to be with you. And when I got this topic, this was given to me. I didn't choose it. But when I got this topic, I thought, oh, man, I've got a month to figure this out. But I have learned some things just in the past month, and I've learned some things in the past year that hopefully we can use and that will help us all. Because I'm not going to just, my goal is not to give you a punch in the arm. My goal is to give you some ideas, some things you can do, because sometimes that's what I want. It's like, give me something to do. Give me something instead of, okay, the patronizing, don't worry, if you don't marry in this life, you can marry in the next. I just all of a sudden feel so much better. It's probably similar to, oh, don't worry, you'll see them again. I better. I mean, you know, they make it sound like it's a new information. You know, it's like, oh, good, I didn't think I was. I thought I was going to be discriminated in the next life, that I couldn't marry in the next because I made a mistake here somewhere. And anyway, it's just crazy. And so, in fact, one of my favorite statements actually comes from a woman that told Jack Christensen. Do you know who Jack Christensen is? I love him. He's a dear friend of mine. And he went to California and was speaking. And he was speaking to some singles. And he said that a woman came up to him. And as far as the whole, oh, I can't shut this, it's too hot. And so she says, you know, when people talk about, oh, don't worry, things will resolve in the next life, things will resolve in the next life. She says, that's like telling a hungry child, I'll feed you next week. And I thought, wow, that just really sang to my soul and gave me some validation there. And so I'm not going to do that, but we are going to talk about principles. And as President Packer said, that the study of doctrine changes behavior more than the study of behavior changes behavior. And so my hope is that we talked about some doctrines and principles today. It will give you ideas of what you can do in your life, not just know, that will hopefully make a difference. So the first principle, which we're all very much aware of, is that it is not good that man should be alone. And of course, we'll include women as well, men in general. It is not good that we should be alone. In fact, I love the statement, no one can flourish in isolation. You ever thought about that? You can do stuff, but you really can't flourish to your capacity in isolation. In fact, think about it. When they have prisoners and they really want to punish them, what do? They put them in isolation. We absolutely need other people in our lives. So this is from Kevin Worthen. I really recommend this talk. He just gave this in January at BYU. He's the president of BYU. And he says, no one can flourish in isolation, and that the quality of our relationships with others will ultimately determine our level of fulfillment and happiness in both this mortal existence and in the life to come. It is in this sense that it is not good for man or woman to be alone. And I thought this was really fascinating. And I think your own life can really sing a song to this next statement, is that very little that is positive is solitary. Think about all the wonderful experiences you've had, all the wonderful memories that you have, and the excitement that you have. Rarely is it ever when you were alone. So, this is a neuroscientist that is, I think, is just phenomenal. He says, very little that is positive is solitary. When was the last time you laughed uproariously? And I'll add, when you were alone. And if it was, it was really brief. Because you're like, ah! Like, I laugh in my car, but it's not long. You know? In fact, I went and saw a comedian recently with a friend, and every time something was really funny, we naturally looked at each other because we were connecting and having an experience together, right? Because you're And how many inside jokes do you have, especially with your family? Like one little statement and everyone's like, ah, because it brings you back to an experience you had that was fun and that was made you all laugh. And so, and I want to prove this. So anyway, the last time you felt indescribable joy, the last time you sensed profound meaning and purpose, the last time you felt enormously proud of an accomplishment. When that happened, you weren't like, yay for me, like in the mirror, or one of your children, like, yay for you, that's awesome. Now let's go do something else. You know, it's never something alone. The last time you felt, even without knowing the particulars of these high points in your life, I know their form, all of them took place around other people. And I just made a list of things I thought of. And look at this. How many times do you send out wedding invitations, receptions? You want people to be with you in these wonderful experiences, baby showers and blessings. You invite people to come experience this wonderful experience with this couple who just had a baby, right? It's not just, oh, nice for you. We'll mail you something. We want people around us in these situations. Ordinances, graduations, traveling, awards, retirement parties, anniversaries, performances, athletic games. How many times do you invite your parents to see one of your children playing a baseball game or dance in a concert or something like that? You want people to be a part of that. Birthday parties, missionary departures and returns. Let's just call them farewells and homecomings like they really are. Oh, this is being recorded, isn't it? Follow the brethren. Okay, anyway. They're not farewells and homecomings. And I had an experience like this that was, as I looked at this principle, I thought, oh my goodness, I have had a couple of these. And this was kind of a big one. I have a list of dates that when I do get married, we're going to sit down and I'm going to go, okay, pull out your calendar. Okay, where were you September 23rd in 2008? You were in the wrong place because I was painting the garage. And anyway, I have this like list of things that I'm like, no, he should have been here on this one. And and this was one of them. It was so strange. If you looked at the bio, I work for the church and I have taught full time in seminary and institutes for over 20 years. And I love it. And we have what's called, what do they call them? The award nights. Recognition nights. Thank you. We have recognition nights where people who have worked 20 years, 30 years, and the retirees all get honored and they have a banquet and they have a big program and has like a write up and pictures of each one and their spouse. And it's a really big deal. And as far as my friend and I could figure out, because I was getting mine and she was like, oh my goodness, are you the first in church history to make it full time 20 years in seminaries and institutes? I'm like, I don't know. I didn't want to do this. And so she researched, she says, one other woman. I'm like, okay, I'm the second in the history of the world. And, you know, so this is kind of a big deal, but at the same time, I'm kind of like, well, whatever. And so it came to the time and you invite your spouse and you invite your family and things like that. And I'm like, I don't know who to invite. No one. Because my parents are gone. They've passed away. And I have siblings, but no one's really invested in this part of my life like me. They know I do stuff, and they go, oh, that's nice. And then when they need it, like a speaker, can you come do this? I'm like, sure. And so I just thought, you know, they're not invested. This is not something they really need to be at. And so here I am at my 20 year. I'm holding my new clock that I got. And then this is me holding my husband's boutonniere they gave me. 20 years and they don't know I'm not married?
Do you still have it?
Yes. It's going on my list. I've hung it. Seriously, it's hanging by, now that you say that, that's embarrassing. I totally forgot about it. But it is actually hanging on the hanger next to roses from my mother's casket and my father's flowers from my father's. That's kind of weird, but that's the only place I hang flowers. So yeah, so I had this wonderful positive experience and they have like you and your spouse walk across the stage and all this stuff and I'm like and then you go into this banquet and they have a table set aside if you have a family, for your family, and da 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 da. And people were kind of chatting with me, and I go into the gym full of people. It's our whole area. And I'm like, I don't know where to sit or who to sit with. And sometimes I leave after that, after the meeting sometime, because I'm like, I don't want to play the who do I sit with game. And I'm like, it's my night. I have to stay. I ended up sitting with some secretaries that like work at seminaries, and they were talking about the WISE program that helps them keep roll. And then another seminary teacher finally came down. I'm like, Andy Horton, you're my new best friend. You know, we started talking and stuff, and it was like, oh, okay, thanks for talking to me. And then I just kind of went home and went, yay for me. And it was weird. But do, yeah, feel sorry for me. I'm over it. Anyway, but think about all these wonderful positive things in our lives. We want to share them. That is part of living. That is what we do. The same neuroscientist, Seligman, said, a social neuroscientist has argued that loneliness is such a disabling condition that it is clear that the pursuit of relationships is a rock-bottom fundamental to human well-being. Rock bottom. Not just a good idea, not just helpful. Heaven will be heaven. Think about this. Ooh, I can't wait for the next slide, but we'll wait. Okay, heaven will be heaven because of the other people who will be there. This is not even a member of the church. And experiencing heaven on earth will ultimately depend to a large degree, not on our relationships, but the quality of our relationships with others. Now, this is on your LDS.org website under the Becoming Like God essay. Look at this. I think this is phenomenal. Church members imagine exaltation less through images of what they will get. You don't sit there and think, oh, I can't wait to get to the other side. I'm going to get a mansion. I'm going to get all the cars I want. And I'm going to get this. And I'm going to be rich, but it doesn't really matter because I'll have everything. You don't think about that. You think about this next part. You think more through the relationships that you have now, and those relationships might be purified and elevated. When you think of the next life, you immediately think of those you have loved that have gone on, right? That is heaven. That's really like, you don't go like, where's my mansion? Good to see you. Where's the mansion? You just don't do that. This is what we're all about, is relationships. You ever felt like that? So I'm not talking that you just need to be around people. Because haven't you ever felt lonely in a crowd? Even to the point where you're like, I got to get out of here. I'd rather just be home alone than in this group of people that I love. But right now, I just feel very, very lonely. Kind of at your 20-year banquet. But look at this. Have you ever felt this kind of loneliness? Sports fans, that's the Cameron crazies. Okay. I know. I actually tried to crop these guys out. I'm like, well, they're kind of disturbing. Anyway, but yeah, if you know about Duke is like the worst place to play as an opposing team because of the Cameron crazies. They are crazy, and they are literally just inches from you, and they're yelling at you. They can almost touch you, and it is so awful. Talk about lonely. It is very, very difficult. Check this out. Have you ever felt that? Don't be so happy when I'm sad. It's very, very difficult. I hate that one too. I know. But we've all felt that. And this is my point, is that it's not just being widowed. It's not just never being married. It's not being orphaned. It's not losing a job. Do you see what I'm saying? We all feel this. And we'll talk about this a little bit more in a little bit. So let's go back to President Worthen's point again. No one can flourish in isolation, and it's the quality of our relationships that are going to make the biggest difference. So what can you do to have better quality relationships? And this is something I feel so strongly about and didn't even realize how strongly I felt about it. We need to connect. Not just be with other people. You need to connect with other people. And so here's the definition of connect. The act of connecting two or more things or the state of being connected. And so it's finding something in common. Do you realize that is why you are here or why you're part of the Facebook page? You're connecting with people who understand a part of you. And that's meaningful. It's not just nice. It's meaningful. So we need to make meaningful connections, not just be with other people. Because sometimes they say that, oh, just don't be alone. Okay. So here's some suggestions. Number one, be authentic. Don't think about yourself and trying to be perfect. Being authentic is more likely to help you make friends. Because you're just truly you, and then you can really connect with things that matter to you. To connect with others, you have to show who you are and stop trying to fit in. That can be scary, yet it's the only way to truly connect. These are my connections, okay? And I wanted to point out, none of them are my spouse. Well, the dancing boys almost were, but... Kristen is right here. She is my bestie. That's what it says on my phone when she calls, bestie, with a little smiley face. And I go, hello, bestie. And we talk every day. But our first connection was seminary teaching. And there are not a lot of full-time female seminary teachers. And when we taught seminary together, we were the two of three women. Was there three of us? In the whole area. And an area is about 75 people. And so my first year, I was the only. And so, yeah, I was kind of the blue ball. I'm like, hi, guys. Anyway, it was great. And so as they started getting more women, when I say more, they just kept rotating through. Oh, you're my new friend. You're my new friend. You're my new friend. And they just would get married, have babies, and leave. And so when I left that area, we had a total of four. And so anyway, Kristen and I connected in seminary teaching. And then she got married and since has had six children. And we connect every single day. And what I love about it is that was our first connection. My point is you don't have to have a lot of things exactly alike. She's 8 years younger than me. She has six young children. But that's my best friend. You know, it's not like, oh, well, we can't be friends because I don't have kids. I mean, no. And I call her my level head. I've already called her that today. And every time we get like a little messed up with craziness of life, we'll call each other. And if we use the phrase level head, that's a signal for the other one to like get in the mode. Okay. Okay. Let's talk. Okay. And so the level head helps you see things clearly that you're not seeing that you need help with. And so she's my level head. So I walk with Kara. I love sports. I love watching it. I love participating. I was listening to baseball games yesterday. I mean, I love it. I listen to sports radio, things like that. But I don't have a lot of girlfriends that like sports. And so when I found a secretary at work that liked to play racquetball, I'm like, let's play! You know, I was like so excited. And then Marianne. I've known Marianne since my BYU days. We were Relief Society presidents. Remember college days when you had like several elders quorums and several Relief Societies in the same ward? Because there's so many of you. And we live next door to each other, which was kind of weird. But she was Relief Society president of the even number apartments, and I was Relief Society president of the odd number apartments. And so she'd always tease, like, yeah, you're Relief Society president of the odd girls. Like, yeah. And she'd always say, and you always had the worst problems, too. I'm like, can we switch? Anyway. And so, but we've stayed friends, and we still go to BYU games, and we still go to sporting events that we know other people won't go to. And so it's a wonderful connection. And then you just have other things here. And I want you to think, it might be a good idea for you to sit down and do this. Who have I made connections with? Because they're going to be different people, etc. Now, I'm telling you, when I get married, he's going to be a part of a lot of this. Of course. That's natural. And I hope to do a lot. But at the same time, you need other connections as well. That's just life. The next, I'm not going to spend a lot of time with this. It kind of goes without saying. Social media can really cause a problem as far as connecting with people. Disconnect to connect. Be with the people you're with. Instead, I saw a picture I thought was hilarious. It was a groom and a bride in a limo, and they were both on their phones. I'm like, maybe they were talking to each other. Anyway, but it also can be a connection. So how many times do you connect with someone like, oh, did you watch last night? Like there's a series that you have in common that you like to talk about and et cetera. My nephew, like I love my nieces and nephews. I call them the victims of my need to nurture. And so I'm always trying to kind of like, what can I do to connect with Nate, you know? And Nate is in college and stuff. And I just, he was kind of going through a weird time and stuff. And he texts me and he was just like, hey, we're going to the third Hunger Games. Do you want to come? And I'm like, oh no, I don't. But I love you. I didn't say that in the text. And so, but I was like, what am I going to do? Yes, I would love to come. And I'm like, I've got to find the first two movies because I don't know anything, you know, but I wanted to connect with Nate. And so that's a way you can do that. You can use media to connect with people. This is my favorite. This is my best to do for you. Be creative. Be creative. President Uchtdorf gave a wonderful talk to the sisters, which can easily be applied to the men. And so, gentlemen, as you listen to this, you can just easily connect it. But I want you to think in what ways you are creative, in what ways you can be creative, maybe something new.
The desire to create is one of the deepest yearnings of the human soul. No matter our talents, education, backgrounds, or abilities, we each have an inherent wish to create an endlessly creative and eternally compassionate God. Think about it. Your spirit body is a masterpiece, created with beauty, function, and capacity beyond imagination. Spirit, the greater your capacity to create.
So like I say, this is my favorite one. Do you feel like, oh, I can do this? You know why? It's in your DNA. Let's look at a couple of things that he said and didn't say. This is from the talk, and the reference is on the top. Creation brings deep satisfaction and fulfillment. We develop ourselves and others when we take unorganized matter into our hands and mold it into something of beauty. And that can take many forms. My favorite is my yard. Do you love that? There's something about a clean edge, you know, and this flat mode. Right. Yeah. No, it's all good. I had football boys come to my door today. We're doing a fenderizer. Do you have pest control and yard work that you can? I'm like, taken care of by me. You know, it's my therapy, you know? And so I'm like, no, this is, but it's something simple. Like, look at all the examples he gave in there. And so think about it. You're taking, okay, let's go to this next one. It'll help me. Remember that you are spirit children of the most creative being in the universe. It's in your DNA. It's part of your personality. You want to create. That's who we are. Think about who your parents are. They are heavenly beings and the most incredible creators of the world. No wonder you want to create. I've built two houses, and part of my fun of creation is I was in a boring meeting. Did I say boring? I was in a meeting one summer. We have long summer meetings, and I just took out a piece of paper, a lined piece of paper, and drew two rectangles and put my floor, my parents' floor. And I drew each floor with two bedrooms, a full kitchen, living room, bathroom, and a laundry room. And I took it to an architect and said, what can we do here? I loved creating it. And for so long, I was like, oh, thank you, Heavenly Father, for letting me create on this quarter of an acre of your earth. Like, no one got it. I got it, you know. And then I just built another house 2 years ago because my parents passed and I didn't live in half my house. And so I thought, I'm going to build my retirement house. So I just built a rambler with an unfinished basement, because if you finish it, people will live with you. And so I'm like, no. And so, oh, sorry, I don't have room. Anyway, I just have two other bedrooms. Anyway, don't tell them. And so I loved it because once again, I thought, what do I want it to look like? And so I just like drew it and did that creative process. And once again, I'm like, wow, thanks for letting me like create on your earth. This is so awesome. People are gonna have to knock it down to do something else. And so whatever it is, you get to create something. And it can happen every single day. We were created in the express purpose and potential of experience of fullness of joy. Our birthright and the purpose of our great voyage on this earth is to seek and experience eternal happiness. One of the ways we find this is by creating things. Think of what you can do, what you can create. Instead of looking at some of our emptiness, like what can I create to fill the emptiness? Kristen pointed something out to me this week I hadn't even realized. And she says, think about the two most painful days for a single person, especially in my situation. She says, Valentine's Day and Mother's Day. And she says, and you have made them two of the happiest days of your life. And I did it because they were some of the most painful days of my life. And so I give my students the big heave-ho when they start saying, Happy Single Awareness Day on Valentine's. And I said, that is not allowed in my room. That is self-centered. It is a pity party. And there are so many other people to love than a romantic situation. This is a day we get to celebrate the people we love. And you go out and do things. And I'm telling you what, my students have been so creative on Valentine's Day, especially my girls who feel bad. And they tell me, guess what I did on Valentine's? I'm like, wow, that is so cool. I've never thought of that. And so they're making it a wonderful day. Mother's Day, same thing. Can be very, very, very painful. And when that is all I've ever wanted to be. Like I say, I never wanted to teach seminary for 20 years. I was going to get off my mission, get married in a year, and have 8 kids. That was the plan. It almost happened. But it's just what is. And so some of those painful things came around, and I'm like, I've got to work on this. And so Kristen and I have talked about this. She's giving a lesson in church tomorrow, and she gets to teach Relief Society on Mother's Day. I love Mother's Day. And I actually helped my students get to the point where I said, I'm going to save you a lot of grief, girls. Before you even start having children, I'm going to make Mother's Day the best day, because there are married people like, I hate Mother's Day. I don't feel like a good mom. It makes me feel guilty. I don't like standing and getting my flower and all this stuff. And so I said, I'm going to take that away from you right now. And we go through, when I talk about Eve in my Women in the Scriptures class, that Eve was named the mother of all living years, perhaps decades, centuries before she ever bore a child. Motherhood is part of womanhood. It is the most beautiful part of womanhood. It is in us. The seeds and the desire to create and be a mother, etc., are in women. That is who they are. And so I got so uncomfortable sometimes when people would be like I'd see them at church and I go, Happy Mother's Day. And they go, yeah, happy, good to see you. Like they don't know what to say to me. You know, like, I'm not, you know. And I've hopefully trained people that are close enough to me when I can say, Happy Mother's Day. And it happened today, actually. My cute little niece-in-law, her and my nephew just adopted a little baby that they've waited for 8 years. And they're having a bridal shower right now. And so I went early and held little Ruby Jane. And the first thing I said when I walked in, I'm like, Happy Mother's Day, DeAndra! She's like, thank you. Like, she was like so excited. And when I left, I hugged her and told her I loved her. And I said, Happy Mother's Day. And she goes, Happy Mother's Day to you. I'm like, thank you. Because that's the way we should be. We just have to love being who we are. And so my brother often will have me for dinner on Mother's Day because he and my nephews make dinner for all the women. And he's like, come on over. And so I thought, I'm going to make a little something for the moms. And the more I started thinking about it, I was like, okay, let's think this through. And so I started creating, like, what can I do here? Which is really fun. And so I ended up bringing all these fun treats for my sister-in-law, my older nieces, clear down to one-year-old Jenny. And I'm like, Happy Mother's Day, Jenny! Because is she a mother? Absolutely. Absolutely. It is who she is. It is what she is made, part of who she is made of, etc. And how wonderful to get these girls thinking about it. And it got the little nephews thinking about it, because when Father's Day came around, my niece said, yeah, the boys are like, is Colleen coming? Yeah. Oh, good. She's going to bring us a treat because it's Father's Day. That was Ben. And I did. I was going to put a picture. They have their cute little cookies they're holding. And so this year, this is what I created for Mother's Day for all the girls. And I'll tell you, it was a little frustrating, but the creation process was really fun. And so it's helping me love Mother's Day, because I created this and I get to give this. It's not like, oh, I hope I can survive this. You know, no. And so part of that creation is really up to us. Creation means to bringing into existence something that did not exist before. And it doesn't have to be physical. As a single person, like I say, those poor nieces and nephews, victims of my need to nurture, I have princess parties, royalty reunions, Joseph Smith sleepover, birthday parties, so Santa can wrap, you know. Tons of things, but it's just something I had to think about and create. And so it doesn't necessarily have to be physical. Oh, Brigham Young, love this. There is a great work for the saints to do. He said, progress and improve upon and make beautiful everything around you. Cultivate the earth, cultivate your minds, build cities, adorn your habitations, make gardens, orchards, and vineyards, and render the earth so pleasant that when you look upon your labors, your yard, you may do so with pleasure, and that angels may delight to come and visit your beautiful locations. In the meantime, continually seek to adorn your minds with all the graces of the Spirit of Christ. And I added the emphasis on that. The more you trust, because it goes along with this, the more you trust and rely upon the Spirit, so this is what you use, the greater your capacity to create. That is your opportunity in this life and your destiny in the life to come. Trust and rely upon the Spirit. That will help the creative process. It's not just about making this. It's about building people and lives and making meaningful connections. Think about it. Why do people have affairs? It's not because they're alone. They're not connecting with their spouse. To see how it has to be meaningful. As you take the normal opportunities of your daily life and create something of beauty and helpfulness, you improve not only the world around you, but more importantly, the world within you, which brings the joy, which brings the happiness. Look at just different ways you can do this. Scrapbook, garden, cook, bake, work, woodworking, remodel, paint, start a blog, start a new family tradition, create meaningful experiences. What do you enjoy? Jim and I talked about that he put his wife's blog into a scrapbook the year after she passed away. Therapeutic. Yeah. Created something meaningful. Boy, is that going to bless his family and how wonderful that is. But find something you enjoy. And by the way, while you do that, you'll make connections with other people who enjoy the same thing. This is probably my most important point, is this next point here. What I suggest as far as finding joy and overcoming loneliness is asking yourself this question over and over and over. We are a truth-seeking church. That's why you're in this church. You want the truth. You want the truth about you. You want the truth about the next life. You want the truth about everything. Don't lie to me. What's the truth about it? So sometimes when I feel like I am getting a little too lonely or I am getting a little off kilter, you can feel it and you start kind of getting in that pittiness and that I'm just not right, that kind of thing. This is what I tell my students to do. I said, think of your biggest problem. I'm going to do it with you. Think about your biggest struggle right now that has a propensity towards depression or to feel sad. Didn't take long to think of it. You're like, just one? Anyway, yeah. Now think of that problem. But now what I need you to do is take the emotion you've tied to it and set it aside. Take the emotion out. You're like, yeah, I can't. Yes, you can. Take it out. And so now you're almost like a third person looking at yourself. And ask yourself, what's the truth about your situation? What's the truth about your problem? Well, it's temporary. I don't care what you thought of. I promise you what you thought of is temporary. Truth is, Heavenly Father knows who I am. Truth is, he knows I'm feeling frustrated, that I'm sad. The truth is, he's not going to leave me in this state. The truth is, I do have hope in what can't. You see what I'm saying? I don't know what it is. Pick a problem, okay? But just go through the truth of it. Mm-hmm.
Can you give an example of that?
Okay, we'll use me, because that's all I know. You know, as far as that, because it is. It's difficult. Sometimes I look at myself like, oh my gosh, how did I get to this age without a family? How did this happen? Okay, let's take the emotion out. What's the truth? Well, the truth is, I think this was part of the plan all along. I don't think it. I know it. I know it was part of the plan. I know I'm going to get married, and I will testify to you that that will happen. And when I do, the invitation will say what David said regarding Goliath, that all the world may know that there is a God in Israel. If you ever question, when I get married, like, oh my goodness, there is a God. Anyway, she got married. So, but I know I will. My husband is in four paragraphs in my patriarchal blessing. And it's mortal. A lot of it is mortal. And so to get to this point, I'm like, what? And now things are making a little more sense. The truth is, and I'm going to get to this in a second, mortality involves a lot of suffering. And we need to get a correct view of the doctrine. I think it's a doctrine of suffering. In my patriarchal blessing, like how many of you go to it for comfort? I don't. Sometimes I do. And when I do, I go like this.
Don't read those paragraphs.
Because it'll say things like, as far as like trusting in the Lord and just different gifts will help you to bear tribulations that otherwise would be unbearable, to be patient in situations that would be intolerable, and to love the Lord in spite of adversity, afflictions, and torments. I didn't really know what that meant in my 20s, but since I know exactly what every one of those words mean. No doubt. So the truth is, God knows this. He knew ahead of time. And the truth is, I'm happy. Can you imagine me married? It's disgusting. It'd be like, yeah, like those yellow balls are all me. Anyway, it'll be like crazy. Okay? But it's a choice. Does this help? So once you can get the emotion out, and almost like my level head, because that's what she says. I always say, give me statements like I'm five. Talk to me like I'm five. Because those are things that make a difference. You know who's really good at that? Is Elder Holland. He will say really simple statements. Well, actually, he yells them. Do you notice that? He reaches through the TV, grabs you by the neck, and shakes you. And you're like, do it again. You know, like you just love it. In fact, what has gotten me through, I have three talks I refer to all the time that help me on bad days. And one of them has become quite popular with social media and internet. But I have it. I have the original CD from 1999 and High Priest of Good Things to Come. And I will play it in my car. And when he's like, there is light at the end of the tunnel, you know, and he's like yelling things like, he's an apostle and he can't lie. You know, and so I just love those little simple statements. And so you need to ask yourself, what is the truth? Oh, Trust in the Lord by Elder Scott, October 1995. My favorite talk of all time ever given in my lifetime. 1997, October, Elder Maxwell. Apply the Atoning Blood of Christ. Favorite talk for good day, bad day, and everything in between. It still rocks my world. I still can't listen to it all the way through without stopping and rewinding little parts. Because it's Elder Maxwell, drink of water from a fire hydrant. So, and this is the first truth I really want you to start with. I love this. Who is your God? Don't just tell me Heavenly Father and Jesus Christ, or Jehovah of the Old Testament, Jesus Christ of the New, the one that Joseph saw in the grove, blah, blah. I want to know who your God is. Some of you were here on Thursday when President Sister Irian spoke. She is the daughter of President Nelson, and they lived in Murray, and I've taught their children and stuff. But President Irian, who is a mission president and a bishop, etc., was a gynecologist, and he was my gynecologist. And I actually worked with him as a CES rep when he was a bishop. So I know them really well. In fact, I'm sitting in a soccer game and he comes to watch his kid and he's like, I haven't seen you in my office for a while. I'm like, yeah, I need to make an appointment. You know, and so, and his next, this was May. The next appointment was September. I'm like, that's okay, just check up, you know, whatever. Well, I go for that checkup and just very calmly, he says, you know, I'm going to order an ultrasound. And I was like, I'm not pregnant, you know, I promise. Certain things have to happen. And so I was like, okay. And so he got me a little nervous. And sure enough, he says, you've got a tumor in there that needs to come out no matter what. If I take it out right now, it'll end up in hysterectomy. He said, if we can shrink it, then the higher chance to save that organ. And I'm 38 years old, never married, hoping, you know, that eight children have gone now to like, just give me one. You know, it's just like, please. Notice the creation thing. I wanted to create a child. I wanted to feel that in my own body. I wanted to pass on things in this life. I'm not against adoption. Like I say, we have it several times in my family, but I think you sisters especially know what I'm talking about. And so he knew me. He knew how important this was to me. He says, let's try this medication. Let's see if we can shrink it. And the higher, you know, the most we can shrink it, the higher the chance to save things. Well, if we can do it for 4 months, if the medication works. And I'm like, okay. So I go through this 4 month of medication and then we go in for the, and it was shrinking. It did work. And we go in for the surgery and he says, we need to talk about hysterectomy. And I said, I know, I want to talk about it. And I said, what are the chances? He goes, minimal. It shrunk again. And I said, I need a number. And he said, less than 15%. And I'm like, whoa. Sweet. And so I'm like, great. And so I'm going in super hopeful, really hopeful. Everything's going to be great. And the first thing I know, I can't open my eyes, and he's trying to wake me up. And he's like, Colleen, wake up, wake up. And I'm like, oh, I'm trying. As I was in recovery, and he goes, no one remembers recovery. I can't believe you remember. I'm like, oh, I remember it. And he says, I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry. It was bigger than we thought. I had to take everything. And there was actually more tumors. And I was like, great. And so I practiced what I would say if this happened. So I was trying to pat him, but I couldn't see. And he wasn't close enough, so it looked like I was waving or I don't know what. And I go, it's okay. I know you tried. And then I just kind of fell back down. And he came in the next day. And if you were there, you notice he's a very emotional man. And he comes next to me and he goes, can I come in there? I'm laying in my hospital bed. I'm like, sure. You know. And he literally leans down and he picks up half my body and just holds me. Because I cried so hard when I really came to the first night. All my children died in one day. And I felt that. And I didn't care if people heard. And I wept and wept and went through that. And he was so compassionate. And he said, I even thought of trying something new. I tried everything I could. And I said, I know. I know, and I appreciate that. And bless his heart, like Emily, who was here on Thursday, one of my students, she was married at the time, and she came and saw me at the hospital, and she said, I happened to go visit my parents the day of your surgery, and Dad came home and told me what happened, and we both sat there and cried, because they knew it my desire. But when I was in the hospital for 5 days, because it was like a C-section thing, and I was in the mother's wing, and I saw all these little babies rolling down the hall, and all these things, and dealing with stuff, I found myself comforting other people because I had to go through a process, and this is what I want you to think. I never knew this would be a public conversation, but it's the best way I can teach you who your God is, especially in your situation. And so I would say, especially my sisters, they had the hardest time with it because they knew me. And my mom even said, of all my four daughters, you love children the most. This is so ironic. And I would put my hand on my chest, and I would say, my God is all-powerful. Do you believe that? I said, my God is all-powerful. He could have made it to where this never happened, that he would have been able to save this organ. I think he's so powerful that he could have made it to where the tumor never even existed or disappeared like it often happens. You know what I'm talking about? He didn't. And I said, my God is all-knowing. He knows me. He knows my life. He knows my future that I don't know. He knows me better than anyone. And then I said, my God is all-loving. He loves me more than I love myself. He wants me to be a wife and a mother more than I want to. Don't you agree? And so I said, so if my God, who is omniscient, omnipotent, and all-loving, chose not to intervene because he could have, this was not an act of sin, chose not to intervene, everything is as it should be. And that's what gave me peace, was defining who my God was. After 5 days, my brother called me and he said, I have to tell you about your hospital room. And I said, what's that? And he says, I have never felt a feeling like that except in the temple. And I said, isn't that interesting? I never felt to watch TV once in 5 days. You must define who your God is. This is phenomenal. This is from Elder Holland. I can't tell you the reference because it's illegal. He gave this in a state conference. You're not supposed to record it. And anyway, I heard it. But he made people write this down. He says, endure and save yourself for days of happiness ahead. Isn't that a forward-facing principle? I'm going to add my own thing to it. So I'm taking Elder Holland's name off of it and saying, endure and save and prepare yourself for days of happiness ahead. I used to teach marriage prep and different things, dating, courtship, whatever. And I always say, I'm always in a state of preparation. And if I'm this way at this age, you better do it at yours. I'm constantly reading books, studying things of how I can be a better wife and mother. And I'm telling you what, when I get married, that's going to be the most spoiled man on the face of this earth. Stop loving me so much. Okay. And so we need to prepare. And then he said this. I love this statement. This is a church of happy endings. This is a church of happy endings. He said that, and this is his own opinion. He said, this is Jeffrey R. Holland 101. He said, my opinion of why the one-third did not vote for the Father's plan was because they were afraid to suffer. Think of the badge of courage you just felt. He says that they were terrified, was the word he used. They were terrified of suffering. They were terrified of the risk of failing and making wrong choices. It wasn't this, hey, everybody has come back. That's more attractive. He says, not that. This, and you look at, and he says, don't, and he yelled when he said ever. It's like the loudest I ever heard him yell. He says, don't you ever say that Heavenly Father doesn't love you because of the hardships that have come into your life. He doesn't love you because you've had to suffer. And then he says, well, what is this? And he pulls up the scriptures. He says, you name one person in these scriptures or character that did not suffer. And he says, why don't we just pull out all the stops and go right to the Savior? Are you saying that he wasn't righteous and that God didn't love him? If we are truly disciples of Christ, we will suffer in one way or another. But once again, we are a church of happy endings. I don't have time to go there, but let me give you this reference. Mark chapter 4, verse 35 is when Christ is on the water with the disciples. And look at what he says in verse 35. He says, let us pass over unto the other side. But remember on the way there, they had that terrible storm. Master, carest thou not that we perish? These are seasoned fishermen, and they're thinking they're going to die. And he's asleep. They go down, carest thou not that we perish? If God, Christ, said, we're passing over to the other side, you know you're going to pass over to the other side. He's never lied, and he's not going to start with you. It's about happy endings. He will get you to the other side. There is happiness and joy and wonderful things on the other side. I have for you, if you want to grab one on your way out, that picture of the sacred grove. And it has Joseph's quote on here that says, all is well I have learned for myself. And you can fill in that blank. All is well. You have learned for yourself who your God is. You have learned for yourself the truth about your situation. You have learned for yourself the wonderful plan of happiness. Everything is involved in that. You're going to see the brethren hit that key more and more and more about the plan. We're just not getting it. If we got it, we would endure much better and save ourselves and prepare ourselves for happy days ahead, because I testify to you, they're not only ahead, but they can be today too through our choices. And I say this in the name of Jesus Christ. Amen.